If somebody likes it. So Kevin, we have a guest coming, is that correct?
Yeah, so we've been talking about doing this for a while, and one of my partners in crime that I work with on the 20 by 2 show is coming in from San Francisco and is going to sit in with us on next week's podcast. So well, Shane can tell you later in tonight's podcast what we're doing for that one.
Yes, I changed my albums, and for those of you that listen to the show or listened to last week's, I had picked a Fantagram record, but I changed my mind and I picked a new one. And do you know what it is, Ryan?
Curveball.
I think Kevin told me and I promptly forgot.
Well, I'm going to hold out. We'll talk about it in a little while. But anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so we're excited. We've been meaning to bring on a fourth guest from time to time. And so we've got our guinea pig. That'll be happening the next podcast. And he's got some stories to tell, so it will not be dull.
He's our friend Jeff.
Yes. So look forward to that. And in the meantime, let's talk about what we got going tonight.
So this week's record is Vampire Weekends.
Vampire's Weekends.
Vampire's Weekends. Vampire Weekends, eponymous debut record from 2008.
What's it called?
It's called Vampire Weekends. It's called Vampire Weekends, eponymous album from 2008.
That's an amazing title.
That's really specific. Yeah. And time appropriate.
I think that Fiona Apple needs to co-op a similar title for her next release.
Fiona Apple's
eponymous release
from 2014.
An audience of four. Although librarians seem to love this record. I can't imagine why.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, yeah. So this is the one
Vampire put out a self-titled
Vampire Weekend, not Vampires.
Not Vampires.
You just said Vampires. So no.
Vampires.
Dinks. Anyway.
We're just going to do the rest of the podcast like movie.
Good God.
No. No.
So the Vampire Weekend record.
Yes.
Why is this so difficult?
Well, I'll tell you. So Ryan and I had a conversation several days ago.
This was fun.
Yeah. Ryan and I had a conversation several days ago, and I was like, oh, hey, by the way, I told him that my wife had bought the record, like, just by dumb luck that we're covering this weekend. And I was like, I haven't really soaked it up yet, but I'm, you know, I can listen to it on the hi-fi. That'll be fun. And I was like, I'm really looking forward to digging into that Arcade Fire record. And Ryan goes, well, that's not what we're listening to. But
you listen to Arcade Fire all you want. We're not going to talk about it.
Yeah. But the thing that occurred to me is that I put Arcade Fire and Vampire Weekend sort of in the same bucket. Like, they were these bands that blew up and they were everywhere, and I just didn't follow the herd on those when they were hot.
I missed
a lot of it.
I've done that before, too, with bands that – I mean, because – Arcade Fire and Vampire Weekend, while played on similar formatted radio, don't sound anything alike.
And one has like 12 members and plays, you know, bizarre instruments. The other one is four dudes from Columbia.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, sonically, it's ironic that you could ever get those two bands confused, but it was just like, and I think that.
Well, there was a similar cultural impact that they had.
There was a similar cultural impact, and I told Ryan a story. Actually, last 20 by 2 plug, I promise. But I told Ryan a story there was a girl who is a rock photographer out of Chicago who came down and did a show.
Sounds like a setup for a joke.
Well, I mean, it is kind of. It is
a rock photographer from Chicago walks into a bar.
What? Anyway. But she's actually really funny, and she told quite a few jokes, and one of them was that, like, if you were trying to get along with people at South by and you went South by Southwest, you just wanted to fit in, then here are a list of words that she was like, just put any of these two words together and it'll sound like you're in a popular band. And one of them was Vampire, and another one was Weekend, and another was Arcade, and there was Fire, and then, you know, whatever. And
I don't want to hear Vampire Fire, though.
Vampire Fire.
That sounds like an amazing magician.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, and she also went on to say that failing that you could just tell people that you're either in Broken Social Scene or Odd Future. And she's like, even people that are in the band won't know that you're not in the band. So,
you know, I actually think I've had an arcade weekend before.
Yeah. Were you like 12?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, dropping off the ball.
Pocket full of quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so circling back, that's why I ended up kind of putting this album in that bucket of like just stuff that was culturally everywhere for a while, yeah. and I just backed away from it and never ended up getting to know. And of course, obviously, these guys have been successful and put out several albums since then. So I was actually pleased that you picked this, even if I originally sort of mixed it up with something else.
Well, that is something that I've noticed that you do, like like, you know, you're just like, I'm not jumping on that bandwagon right now. I think you think that.
Sure.
White Stripes and The Strokes.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned The Strokes, too, because they get called into – even though this band is not sort of sonically an imprint of theirs, there are some things that are – there are some elements of what they do sonically that are a little bit overlapping.
Four White Guys.
Yes. Well, I think it's more than that. But
I'm kidding.
Four White Guys from New York.
Kind of a taut sound, I would say.
Yeah. Anyway, there are some things that that sound a little bit of like,
well,
a little bit like they have a Albert Hammond Jr. imprint on them. But
what are you guys' thoughts? I mean, about this, instead of we're going off talking about a lot of other good bands, but what are you guys, Ryan? I mean, what did you think about it?
I dig it, and that's why I picked it, because sometimes I have to listen to a record I'm not crazy about, and I've heard enough of this. To know that
I thought you were going to say, I've heard enough of the records I'm not crazy about.
Well, that too. There are things that we have listened to.
And you assholes, this week, we're going to listen to something I like, damn it.
Kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I work with some younger folk, and I was actually, like, we're closing the restaurant the other night. I'm like, hey, man, why don't you throw on the first Vampire Weekend record? And they're like, yeah, let's listen to that. And I couldn't really do the same with, say, Hank Williams Jr. High Notes.
Yeah. No, look it up. It's a
Slippery Wind.
I'm sure it's
Slippery Wind.
It's got to be there on Groove Shark.
Yeah. Yeah, the kids aren't listening to Slippery Wind Wet.
No.
I mean, somebody's kids are. But
up in New Jersey, they're still spinning that shit.
Right.
God.
They're crispy bangs. But yeah, I love this record. I mean, I only really knew the singles, and today, really, those are the ones that I know the best, but I think it's a solid record. Like, to my opinion, it warrants the hype.
I definitely have some opinions.
You might.
Yes, yeah.
Well, and I don't really, like we've said in the past, I don't really pay attention to lyrics unless they're particularly good or particularly bad. And Shane tends to focus in on that stuff.
I don't focus in on the lyrics. I just, it's if they're egregiously awful, then...
Well, that's fun.
But I mean, yeah, for this particular record, I definitely am going to talk about the lyrics a little bit, but I think that it's pretty fucking irresistible for about half of it. I mean, the first...
Well, I didn't notice that they front-load the record.
Yeah, it's completely... It's almost split in half. Like, the first six songs are... I think Mansard Roof, the first song, the first single, the first song on the record, is one of the best singles of the last decade, without a doubt. It's heartbreakingly beautiful.
You know, that album is actually so front-loaded that if you set it on the side of a table, the back half just breaks off. Like,
I hate it when that happens.
I know.
Yeah.
So, buy it in digital format.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
See, just even another reason
science.
To get rid of old...
We're talking about science.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, Shane. Do we want
to... No, we can continue to talk about this. I wanted to say that, and we'll talk about a whole host of things that I made notes about. But yeah, you're right, Ryan, and I think you and I are on the same page there. I mean, there are 11 tracks on the record. Track 1 through 6 are all awesome, and then they're just it becomes more and more pedestrian as it goes on. Novelty and pedestrian. There's some novelty stuff. I don't get it. Like it. Sort of where they start treading water. I mean, but nothing on the there's not a bad song on the record.
Yeah, but there are some where they hit it out of the park, and other ones where they're...
Yeah, but the first...
They sound like they're trying to finish out the batch.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so this is one of the things that was kind of interesting. So I went and I looked through some reviews from sources that I don't typically, that I don't always peruse.
Redbook.
Yes, Redbook and Reader's Digest,
journal.
Which was weird. Like,
what was that?
Reader's Digest.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They're
well,
like
they're really short reviews.
Yeah, well, on the, and the print is annoying. So.
The Reader's Digest condensed review
of Vampire Weekend. Don't buy it. It's for the kids. Anyway, no, I read AV Club gave it for the Onion gave it a B minus, and I think you know I probably fall. Maybe I'm a B. Like I don't like it as much as you guys did, but I also feel like this record feels to me. I mean, admittedly, one that I came to late. It feels to me a little bit like. One of those, maybe once you warm up to it, you really fall in love with it. Mm. Records,
rewards and it's repeated listening.
It rewards repeated listenings, and it's a little bit of a slow burn, or at least it was for me.
I thought that. I mean, yeah, I don't know the way that I think that that those are songs are not simple, but sort of simple pop songs. That what was striking to me was the immediacy with which I was bopping along to them, for lack of a
bopping,
for lack of a letter word. My bop it game, I do own a bop it game.
Do you?
So, no, I don't.
Okay.
I don't know what a bop it game is.
Oh, that's a kid thing.
It's like whack-a-mole.
Is it?
Kind of, okay. I think.
I don't know. Ryan's giving me the side eye because I know something about a kid's game.
That's all right.
Like a little, like, normally it's dad Kevin that brings up
kids games.
Yeah.
Yes. Clear, constantly. Because I don't get enough of that in my normal life. So a couple of things that I thought were worth mentioning from this AV Club review, and some of that you guys have already touched on. They mentioned that Ezra Koenig creates flirtatious vocal melodies, and I did find some of that present. Like, and they say that he's rarely falling back on the novelty of his lyrics. Which remain unusual throughout, but that wasn't really my big takeaway. My big takeaway was the fact that, and I saw this kind of called repeatedly, the idea that there were sort of African flavored hooks, you know, that were sort of interspersed with a little bit of this sort of preppy college thing that goes on with that band. So it's a weird mix. Like it's an interesting eclectic sound.
The Calypso stuff. Yeah. They say African in that. I read that same review, but to me it sounds like Caribbean, like Calypso.
Well, okay, sure. Here's the deal. Like, if I hadn't ever read a word about this band, I would not, the African thing wouldn't even
enter. Really? That's the first thing I noticed about them, like a couple
of years
ago.
Well, no. Well, I, you know, they were everywhere when this record dropped. That's right, I said dropped.
Oh.
Oh.
The lingo.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, it's got me sitting down.
No, but I remember, like, I'd never heard the term Afropop, and like suddenly it was everywhere. I also had never thought of Paul Simon's Graceland as a particularly like hip record.
It's not bad, but suddenly
it was like cool.
I thought that Paul Simon's record is directly influenced by like I would have never thought. By the way, there used to be a show on NPR called Afropop.
Could be.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Sounds like the kind of
thing. I think there was. But to me, it sounds more West Indies, like that sort of. I mean, there are like African instruments, I guess that's what they mean. But the way that the music sounds to me is more like I get more steel drum sounding kind of stuff.
So you're thinking it's more Caribbean.
Yeah, I mean that's
yeah.
But this is neither good nor bad. It's just that's what I thought.
No, sure, and I find it interesting. Like I said, for me, it seems like it's a little bit of a slow burn, and so at the very least, for something that sounds admittedly in parts pretty simple, doesn't feel like interpreting it feels simple. Maybe that's one of the things that people ended up liking about that record. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The song, I think the songs are solid.
For me, it could just be that these are such. This is such an impossibly preppy white guy record that I don't, you know. What immediately? Whereas Paul Simon, like, kind of.
What word do I have? Do I have boxed in there?
Preppy.
Yeah,
he does in fact have preppy.
Yeah.
Highlighted. Yeah, it's a super, you know.
We should have donned our topsiders and played played Yacht Rock for the game.
Yeah,
for the game.
Sweater vest.
Yeah, for a few minutes with.
Are you guys? I was thinking this the other night. I was watching
Doctor Who?
I was not watching Doctor Who. No, I was watching Barcelona, which was the second Walt Stillman movie. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Walt Stillman movies.
It's Barcelona.
It is Barcelona. That's the way they say it.
Yes, it's true. But that's a whole other conversation for another time. Walt Stillman did Metropolitan, then Barcelona, then he didn't do another movie for like 15, 20 years. And then he did, oh my gosh, Greta Gerwig was in it. It came out 2 years ago.
Garfield?
No, no. And you know that's not what it was, Ryan.
Dick, party one, Dick. Now, see.
Oh, Damsels in Distress.
Oh, okay.
So all he has this very, and no pun intended, he has a very kind of a stilted, he has a stilted dialogue, and his movies are about.
Was it Max von Sydow?
It's very different, all right? If you guys won't shut up, and I'm not going to tell you this.
I'm sorry. We're picking
up. Go ahead. We're spitballs at Shane right now.
Yeah.
And so, it takes place, so that's sort of this Ivy League, in the Hamptons, people that you get the impression know that they were raised in, you know, Connecticut and Hamptons, upstate New York. And basically, this band, and I was watching, I'm briefly watching Barcelona, which I haven't seen in years, Barcelona, and I was thinking about this. They basically should be the house band for Walt Stillman movies and early Wes Anderson movies.
Wes Anderson, no, like they've got Wes Anderson like all over them, down to their font.
Yeah. No, that's true, and I didn't even actually think about that, and
like, no, it seems like they seem like if Wes Anderson like had a dream in which he came up with the perfect band, it'd be this.
Yeah.
I have lots of notes about the Wes Anderson. I wish you guys were familiar with that Walt Stillman stuff, because he makes great movies, and I would be extremely surprised if Ezra Koenig had never seen any of them.
We'll have to dig those up.
And, you know, another thing about...
He was also a great center in the NBA in the 60s.
Ezra Walt Stillman?
Yeah. 100 points.
Didn't he have sex with a lot of ladies, too?
He did.
One can only assume that they were from great Ivy League schools.
Of course.
When you're that tall,
typically are.
The upside is when you're that tall to notch the bedpost, you don't even have to get up. Like, you can just reach around, up there and, you know, scratch it out, whatever. Well, you're number 78. Congratulations.
I think we're at a point now where we need to stop for a second and play a Vampire Weekend.
Okay. Why don't we do, Mansard
Roof.
Mansard Roof.
Great song.
Track number one off Vampire Weekend's Vampire Weekend. Here we go.
Mansard Roof, the only roof that you need for your roofing needs. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Or for your mansard.
What are you talking about?
channeling like
50s ads.
Well, I think it was ads that would run during professional wrestling when I was a kid.
Yeah.
In any case, that has nothing to do with this song, which I enjoy a great deal.
It's a good song.
Our listeners, the half dozen of you or whatever, may notice a difference in sound quality.
Why is that, Ryan?
I don't know, Kevin. Could you tell us?
Yeah, so, without getting into super boring details, suffice it to say that...
The technical stuff?
Well, suffice it to say that the cord that connects the big board to my laptop, where when we record these, we typically just leave it in here all the time, but we had to change over some stuff with our Wi-Fi setup at my house, and so it got connected to my printer so we could print stuff out, and then it did not manage to get reconnected in here. So anyway,
we've been using a laptop mic without knowing it.
So if we were a little bit echoey up to this point, thanks for hanging in.
You didn't just accidentally get dosed with acid. No, we sounded weird.
You haven't been kidnapped and are in an airplane hangar. This is actually our show.
I don't think any of us have anywhere near enough energy to do the things that you're suggesting we might be capable of doing.
I don't know, man. You seem pretty nefarious.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not nefarious. I'm just saying I'm lazy.
Oh, well, that's true. Nefariously lazy.
Yeah. That'd be like the worst rapper ever. He'd be like, I'm really bad when I'm up to it.
Yeah.
which is not that
odd. Get me up to doing it.
You can't do like raps on like sitting.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, we briefly failed at doing the one thing integral to recording this podcast, and that is connecting the microphones to the computer that records our voices. But the computer continued to record our voices.
Hey, and you know what? Thank God for that, because Shane actually had his mic turned off.
We don't know if I had turned it off.
And apparently, the rest of us were underwater. So if you managed to get anything out of the first 20 minutes, bully for you, you're doing it right. Let's go back to Vampire Weekend. Let's talk about... Mansard Root was the first. Ryan, you made – it was the first single you made, or one of the singles. You made the comment earlier that the singles were really what connected you to this record. And we talked
for sure.
About the fact that it's front-loaded. Like,
well, and this record just sort of like seeped down to me through, you know, various channels or whatever. Some of it was like we now actually have three alternative radio stations in Austin now, and at least a couple of them. Play some Vampire Weekend stuff, and
what are they alternative to exactly? Like, is it alternative to one another? Or,
well, I don't want to sidebar on this too much. I don't know what the hell 101X is alternative to at this point, because their slogan should be, "Hey, remember the 90s?"
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and we'll throw in some Imagine Dragons here.
Yeah,
there,
just occasionally.
Yeah,
and that format actually. Back in the day when I interned in radio, I don't know if it still is called this, but it was called New Ruck, which in 101X's case would be ironic.
Well, I guess the parlance there is
101X.
There are some, there are some of those stations that do a lot of anthem rock, and so this is clearly not one of those type records, and
less Led Zeppelin, more Nirvana.
Yes.
In any case, through various channels, I just. Heard a couple of these singles, and I found myself, and we'll make this one the next one we go into, but I had this like obsession with the single A Punk for like a couple weeks, where I'd just come home from work and turn it on like daily.
Dance around in your underwear,
something like that.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I had an ex-girlfriend who that was like precisely a thing that she liked to do. Good with God. Me, is she called?
Have you dance around in your underwear like?
Well,
Tom Cruise
she would.
She
no,
watched?
She would. No, she would too. Not like Tom Cruise, she was. She was like, "Want to have an underwear dance party?" I was like, "Yes."
We
would drink wine and watch YouTube videos and dance around our underwear. It's not weird.
Like in like pink and white striped shirts and tidy whiteys, or like,
I think I was typically in boxers.
Yeah. So it's not exactly the Tom Cruise fetish.
Anyhow, back to Vampire Weekend.
Vampire Weekend, yeah. That's a band.
Louise. So, but we talked – the other thing that we talked about a little bit in the break was the sort of the Wes Anderson allusions. Like, that like these guys are – they're really into being quirky. It's quirky with a capital Q.
It's true. Well, and did any of you guys discover what what's his name? Ezra. I don't know if it's Koenig or Koenig. There's a road here in Austin that locals pronounce Koenig, but it's spelled the exact same way as Ezra.
And there's a Houston Koenig. Street in New York, so there's all bets are
who
off.
Knows?
Yeah.
But he was in a rap band in college prior to forming Vampire Weekend that was called like. Well, L'HOMME, so the French word for man, which is l'homme, run.
The man.
Yeah, but it was a play on the words home run, and apparently people didn't take them very seriously.
It sounds like maybe they didn't take themselves very seriously or whatnot.
I don't know. The article I was reading, he was like, it was hard for me to take the project very seriously when no one else would. But anyway, fortunately for the rest of us, he did not stick with that, and he... for Vampire Weekend. And
well, speaking of things that he didn't take very seriously, do you know where the name came from?
I do not.
It's a student. It came from a student film that he wrote and was directing. I think during freshman and sophomore year of college, and it was basically like a East Coast version of The Lost Boys.
Oh,
like
did it take place over a weekend, like kind of a Bernie situation?
That's what I'm. Yes, I'm assuming it took place over the weekend, but that was gonna
maybe
because
we could
that was
do like a Weekend at Bernie's sequel with, but like this would actually be more plausible than the actual Weekend at Bernie's sequel
at Bernie.
Because if he was a vampire, you know he'd be he's technically dead anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That actually somebody needs to
vampire
write that down.
Vampire Weekend at Bernie's. Somebody go out there, make it.
Somebody needs to write that down and start making calls.
There's at least $15 in revenue right there.
I'd watch it.
Yeah.
So yeah, he abandoned the project after 2 days, and which interestingly enough is the length of a weekend.
That in fact is the length of a weekend.
I'm just saying.
Hence,
it all adds up.
Yeah, well, you're a sleuth, my friend.
Did you ever read Encyclopedia Brown when you were a kid?
I did, and in fact, my uncle was friends with Donald J. Sobel, and when he told me that when I was in fifth grade, he said something about like his friend writes these Encyclopedia
Our
Brown
uncle
books.
Was an old was a newspaper executive.
Newspaper guy, yeah. And so he mentioned that his friend wrote these Encyclopedia Brown books, and I, like, lost my shit.
I just got a boner right now.
Yeah. I was like, you're friends with Donald J. Sobel?
And he just included the J.
He'd be like,
you mean Don? My friend Don?
Yeah. Anyway, in fact, I did, in fact, read those books.
And there's a lot of sleuthing going
it's
on.
It's true.
Go ahead. One thing that I think we haven't spent a lot of time on, but we always make a point of circling back to, and I think we should now, is lyrical content. Because we talked a little bit about the fact that there's some quirk happening here. And Shane, that's, you know, you're a lyric guy. That's where you hang your hat. What stood out to you?
Well, I'm just – one of the things that – and before I start talking about – I mean, I was mentioning to someone recently – that the next record we were going to be talking about was Vampire Weekend. And she was like – and I quoted – I actually wrote it down. And she said, I like them, but it's hard to tell their songs apart. And I think
– I felt that a little bit.
I can kind of get that.
I see – like there's a lot of – we were talking about Samey last week. This is even more so than Ty Siegel in my mind. Even though I like the lyrics more of a – or it's more of a – straight listen, like I could listen to this album all the way through. I guess maybe because of the sameness, it's just different. But a lot of the reason why I think is because of that Calypso influence, and the other reason is a lot of these lyrics sound like they were written by somebody that was 19 years old in a Ivy League school.
Oddly enough,
I know a lot of them.
To be fair, I think these guys were more like 23.
No, I think a lot of the – I mean there's one of the – on the song Campus, which is a good song, I mean he just – right there, it's called Campus. And so you're walking across the campus, cruel professor, studying romances. But then he also has a really – what I think he thought was clever
– interesting qualifier.
Yes. A line about spilling kefir on what? How do you pronounce it, Ryan?
Oh,
Kefir,
was it?
Yeah, he's just using words all in the song that sort of are 50 Cent words. He does that a lot in his lyrics, like just a little.
I actually pulled the New York Times review for this record, and one of the opening line in this review is that says, "Outside of marching bands and glee clubs, hardly a group anywhere is as proudly collegiate as Vampire Weekend."
Yes.
And I think that's totally true.
Yeah, that's spot on.
Yeah. There's actually, it reminded me of it's a short version to a longer story that I won't tell. My office, we just moved offices, and one of the guys that I work with had his diploma in his back seat, like framed diploma. And we, for whatever reason, we had to get his car and go somewhere. And I
like that—that's where he keeps it.
Well, I think he was just trying to move it to his office or whatever.
Yeah.
But I But I got in the car and I was like, "Is that your diploma?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "You know, you can just say that you went somewhere on your resume. You don't have to. You don't have
no. I've got proof,
that around,
man,
with you." But anyway, yeah, these guys loved being in college. And
maybe he knows some diploma truthers.
But it's not just the being in college; it's the embracing of the whole Ivy League thing. Like there's one song, Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa, and then there's another song later,
which is one of two Cape Cod songs.
There's another one later that he talks about Cape Cod. Then there's another song later. Blake's got a new face where he's directly referencing old San Juan about vacationing in Puerto Rico and. You know,
the sort of hard knocks life that they came up with.
Exactly. Yeah, starts getting at some point. It stops getting interesting after the first few songs, and it's. Did you ever see that? I'm saying, and I completely forget. When you watch movies about old money families fighting and dissolving,
it doesn't feel real.
It doesn't feel real, and it stops being interesting after a couple of minutes.
I actually thought in most ways this record was very similar to Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Because these guys, you know, one group, I'll let you know which, might shoot you in the face. And the other group
is in WA.
Has nice shoes.
Sorry, you just teed that up for me.
I did tee it up for you. So anyway, but I did think it was really interesting. The one lyric that gets pulled in this New York Times review was they said this guy actually made the point that the music is so perky that the lyrics can be cryptic and you just sort of breeze right through it because of the way it sonically, like the way the composition is. And he said he pulled the lyrics, "Eyes like a seagull, no Kansas born beetle could ever come close to that free from Mansard Roof." And anyway, even if you look at it, I was like,
I don't really know that means.
That's an important pull quote.
Yeah,
but
there are some bands that their music is definitely built around lyrics and lyrics matter more, but there are not even arguably brilliant bands like Radiohead that have quite obtuse lyrics.
Certainly.
Well, and intentionally.
Well, and I know,
but the music more, I mean, they're not a lyric-based
band. This is my own personal impression, but it seems to me that the lyrics on this record are like decoration. You know,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't necessarily, I mean, and granted, like, just kind of the way I embrace music, I don't know that well. Like, I don't necessarily dive into lyrics unless they're egregiously bad or ridiculously good. But I don't really remember at any point going like, "Oh, that was really clever." You know. I will say this though: I did not know what an Oxford comma was called.
I was going to say that's pretty clever. Who gives a fuck about an Oxford comma?
Well, yeah. No. But actually, I do. I knew the rule, and I liked to use it. I did not know what it was called.
But it's a great line. I mean, the line is really
No,
clever.
I'm with you.
And so the thing that I thought about is Ryan, one of our music journalist friends, is a staunch supporter of the Oxford comma and very big on it. And I couldn't help but wonder if, like, maybe that was something that.
Well, and we should clarify what the Oxford comma actually is. It's the optional comma that when you've got comma and that you don't necessarily have to use, but some people are very pro Oxford comma, which I am.
It's right before the correlating conjunction.
Anyway, anybody awake?
I do love the fact that we were actually talking about Oxford commas last. I don't know if it were after the show last time or time before, you guys would have heard this, but the two of you would have when I played you guys that Word Crimes Weird Al Yankovic song. And he talks about an Oxford comma in that.
Well, and I think the Oxford comma.
So a fucking Weird Al is referencing Oxford commas.
Good Lord.
He gives a fuck about an Oxford comma.
Well, it's clearly reached a saturation point in the culture.
Why don't we play that goddamn song?
All right.
Oxford comma. Yeah, okay. We should.
All right, let's spin it. Here it is, Oxford comma.
Who gives a fuck about an Oxford comma? I seen those English dramas too. Especially
I give a fuck about an Oxford comma. So yes, that was I do.
You and Weird Al.
Yeah, not enough to write a song about it, but certainly enough to employ it. But anyhow, yeah, I dig that song quite a bit. One of the singles that drew me to this record.
And it doesn't sound like a lot of other things that are out there, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Other than other Vampire Weekend songs.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vampire Weekend songs sound like it's like the Smiths.
Yeah.
You know it when you hear it.
You know it when you hear it, yeah.
So, look at the time, boys.
Yeah, intermission time.
Yeah, let's take that break.
And somebody likes it? A few minutes with.
Game within the game on that is just how many times we're going to fuck up the name of the intermission. But yeah, a few minutes with. We're going to go to the intermission. And then we'll have a little something different to share for you with you guys for a few minutes.
And then we'll come back to Vampire Weekend.
Okay, so we're at the point in the show where we talk about where we do our little intermission segment, which we like to call A Few Minutes With. And I got to say, I wasn't feeling radical a minute ago, but now I'm feeling newly radical.
Newly radical?
I'm kind of feeling it. I'm a little radical. Somewhat radical.
The somewhat radical?
It's a new sensation.
Is that the radical in... sort of you're about to assassinate a head of state?
No.
Or is that a radical as in you are Sean Penn in a movie in the early 80s?
Maybe neither. Yeah. I would like to think there's some gray area.
Throwing like a Hawaii hang loose.
Aloha, Mr. Hand.
Yeah, so... and there's a weird sidebar to that story, which we won't get into right now. But the... I did want to – it was my week to pick the sort of Game Within the Game song, what we call the A Few Minutes With tune.
It's so Matrix.
It is a little. And I chose the new Radicals track, Get What You Give, which I didn't really know when it came out. And I didn't know the story until a long time ago, like a long time after that. And I was actually talking to my wife about this stuff when we first decided to play with this segment. And she was like, oh, my God, you should totally do that song. And then she told me the backstory on it. And I was like, oh, well, shit, now I have to do it.
What's the backstory?
So the backstory is that so if you look on certain music services, they'll show you like the number of times that songs have been downloaded for a band's catalog, and you can really like we've talked about the one hit wonder bands to death, but this song like dwarfs everything else their catalog like tenfold. Like it's got 8 or 9 million downloads compared.
Well, they were
to, like,
only a band for like 2 years. They broke up before their second single came out.
Yeah. So anyway, but part of the deal was this song caught fire, and it just happened that their single was railed against the sort of excesses of the music industry and like sort of like acts that were.
I have a lot to say about this.
Okay,
song.
Yeah. So anyway, but that was the angle at least. And there was a lot to be made in the last few, like the last stanzas of the song, or sort of all about this, like, you know, getting up in the face of and the acts that they want that Greg Alexander and New Radicals want to get up in the face of are pretty funny too, because it's like Marilyn Manson and Hanson and Beck. And I don't know. I don't remember who the
Courtney
other one
was.
Courtney Love. Yeah. Oh, holy shit. Who's always spoiling for a fight. So that's kind of perfect. Anyway, but yeah, and people just like ate this song up like crazy when
it
came out.
None of those acts, by the way, relate to each other in any way. Like it's like he went out there with some dice and rolled dice and picked like these random four musical acts that were somewhat prominent.
Other than the fact that Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson, a.k.a. Brian Warner, which is what she calls him, have railed against each other in public. But
their audiences don't listen.
No, they don't listen to each other.
I mean, I guess they do somewhat, but it's not really cross-pollinating.
Well, and
definitely not Beck. and not definitely not Hansen, though Beck's name is Hansen. Beck Hansen.
I know. I thought that was funny, too, and probably unintended by the songwriter.
Oh.
And I do think that one thing that's pretty fascinating is that Greg Alexander is the guy who wrote the song that it's probably that for Begin Again, which got produced by Judd Apatow. The guy whose name escapes me that did Once. They collaborated on Glenn Hansard, but the guy who actually made that movie with Glenn Hansard as the star.
Oh yeah,
that guy collaborated
with Corman, wasn't it?
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, that guy collaborated.
Andy Griffith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super dudes. So that guy collaborated with Judd Apatow, and they made a movie called Begin Again. And anyway, the tracks that are central to that are really terrific, and they're collaborative efforts. And the ones that are sort of the one that is the sort of main cornerstone track in that movie was written by Greg Alexander, and so there's been a lot of chatter that when Oscar season rolls around, that might get it's probably going to be favored to win an Oscar. And so anyway, it's just a weird circuitous path. That guy's got a very strange career, and that band had a very sort of short mercurial moment. And I just thought it'd be interesting to talk about it. And they shot the whole video. We always watch the video if we can.
They shot
the video in a mall, apparently because he was railing against sort of commercialism. But, see, you know, whatever.
Okay, like, so that's where, like, when he's doing – when I was saying what kind of radical, I never really –
I think it's a tongue-in-cheek radicalism.
Oh, no. I think the guy takes himself extremely seriously.
Well, that could be
true. And I'll tell you why I think that.
It was signed to a major, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but I think that he takes himself very seriously with the lyrics that he's throwing out there to push the envelope with or whatever he's doing. But
Shane is exasperated.
I'm exasperated by this dude. I'm going to read something to you real quick.
Do it.
So we were talking about before about the naming of the bands at the end of the song. It's this kind of like almost rap part at the end of the song where he's talking really quickly and it's not the melody he's been singing before. And he's
his final exclamation point or whatever.
Yeah, and it's all of this stuff. And it's just platitudes. It means nothing. I'll read the lyrics to you first. Health insurance, rip-off lying, FDA, big bankers buying, fake computer crashes dining, cloning while they're multiplying. And apparently, after a lot of the media got involved in pointing this out about Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson and stuff, he then at that point said that the lyrics that he tagged onto the end of the song were an experiment to see if the media would focus on the real issues or on the celebrity ridicule. Okay, I'm going to read you the real issues in the beginning of the song.
Uh-oh.
Wake up, kids. We've got the dreamer's disease. Age 14, we got you down on your knees. Wait, which we are we talking about? Are you associating with the kids that have the dreamer's disease or their knees?
Assuming the character of the corporate oppressor.
Yeah, well, and then he swaps the character in the next verse, the next line, and then so again, this is his idea of really cutting political satire or whatever. So polite, you're busy still saying please, frenemies who when you're down ain't your friend. Every night we smash their Mercedes Benz. First we run and then we laugh till we cry. Oh, yeah, okay. So that's what you want the media to – that's what essentially the guy is saying. Like, he wants the media to concentrate on that inanity instead of the tacked-on stuff, which is just as inane at the end. You didn't do that on purpose. You wrote that at the same fucking time as you wrote the rest of those stupid lyrics.
It's worth noting that this is the first sort of major instance of the word frenemy, which has become part of the lexicon.
Definitely.
Like – And I think that's kind of interesting, too. Like,
hey, if this guy did nothing else the rest of his life, at least he's got that.
He's got frenemy.
He put out one of the most annoying terms of the last 15, 20 years.
Is that a portmanteau? Is that what that's called?
Yes.
Could be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But just don't forget, he had the music in him. Or actually, we have the music in
us. You've got the music in you. And Shane, you do have the music in you. I've seen it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
If you do get a chance to watch the video, one thing that I will say is get to the point where he's in the glass elevator because it seems like he might be being electrocuted.
What? Well, no, he pulls off like a white boy James Brown spin move.
Oh, no, well, minus the spin.
Kevin said James Brown, but I was...
No, Ryan said James.
Oh, Ryan, excuse me. One of the Newsom said James Brown, but I was assuming when that was uttered, it was as sarcastic as... Possibly.
Oh, well, a little bit. I was actually referring to the former UT Longhorn quarterback from the early 90s, James Brown.
Oh, you were? Same thing, though.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, fellas.
I have one more thing I want to say before we
get it in.
It's very important.
I just have to talk about his lyrics one more time. I'm reading some more. This is his genius, brilliant lyrics that he just wanted to make sure that the media would concentrate on. Can't forget you only get what you give. 4 a.m., we ran a miracle mile. We're flat broke, but hey, we do it in style. The bad rich, God's flying in for your trial. So that's what he wants the media to concentrate on, the serious issues. Where's the fucking – that you say the word God?
Well, I don't know, man. I find it deep.
Can I just say that my favorite part of Shane Reed's lyrics, which I wish we had music around that, we get to the exasperated crescendo and then it's just silence. And then he just lets it sit there and Ryan and I kind of look at each other and then Shane goes, "I'll tell you what you should think about it. Here's what you should think about it."
We need like a beat poetry snare
kind of
when he does that.
Right.
Yeah. I will say
I'll read some more to you. This whole damn world can fall apart. You'll be okay. Follow your heart. It's ridiculously stupid.
All right. Can I just say this? I think it's a good pop song. I don't give a fuck about the lyrics. I think it's a good pop song.
It's a cheesy pop
song. It's propulsive and catchy.
It is propulsive.
And I genuinely don't mind listening to it. Now, I'm not trying to learn anything from it, but there's a reason that it's got 13 million or whatever the fuck views on YouTube.
Yeah, and there's a reason that 2.5 Men have 10 million views a week. People have shitty taste in
touché.
Entertainment.
I generally think I don't have particularly shitty taste in entertainment, but I'm not like this is like having like a cream soda flavored Dum Dum. It's good. It's not good for you. There's not substantive.
It's really,
but I can enjoy it for whatever.
That tastes like Hemingway.
I don't know that I want to taste anything that tastes like Hemingway.
All right, we've got more Vampire Weekend coming up next. So that was Get What You Give. We're back out of it and back to Vampire Weekend.
Vampire Weekend, Vampire Weekend.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, the album's
Vampire
so nice.
Weekend's eponymous self-titled 2008 record of which that they named after themselves.
It's like, I was going to call it the record so nice they named it twice. Sort of like a New York thing, which they're into.
I think we all got the New York reference.
Did we? Did we all
did
get
we?
It, Shane?
Did
okay,
we, Shane?
I got it.
All right, yeah.
Anyway.
Kevin and I ain't that bright.
Sure. Anyway, But Ryan, you talked a little bit about the fact that there was a track that you gravitated to on this record.
Well, this just happens like very occasionally in my life that a song will, you know, worm its way into my brain and just doesn't want to leave. And definitely A-Punk was that song for me, to the point where I took a kids, I work at a restaurant. I took some kids to a restaurant.
I'm trying to figure out what that meant.
No. I was referring to our listeners as kids, which they may be fully grown adults for all I know.
Sure.
But in any case, I do work at a restaurant. We had a holiday a few months back, and our proprietor took us all to a winery. Sort of a long way to get around talking about. I brought along my auxiliary cable, and one of the gentlemen I was with wanted to play a bunch of music, and I had to listen to this before I let him play any of his music.
You are so like that. Like you, once something gets in your brain, you have to do.
Well, okay, they wouldn't have any music without me. I was like, I just want to hear one. Then you play whatever the fuck you want. But
I'm saying you as a human being, like you definitely have that.
No, but tendency. When I get it into me, like it, and it's a little OCD. I get it.
I have a little bit of that too. I mean, and we're related, but yeah, there is something that's pretty magical about connecting with a song. And if you connect with something enough that you want to go home and listen to it every day for a while, like, I mean, it was a couple weeks,
like every day I would come home and listen to A-Punk. And it just has, you know, components that for whatever reason, like hit me where I live. And one of them is jangly guitars and like, you know, Uncle. You
wait,
know?
Yeah?
It's a good song. It's good. It's got this little staccato thing that's going on because a lot of what they're doing, like they manage to mix little legato, which is like long flowing lines with like little staccato bursts here and there. And this song is just pretty much all like really punk, like early. It's almost like the transition between punk and new wave, like
right.
In certain ways, it doesn't really sound. The whole song is definitely brighter and more. And poppier. I love this song, and I didn't want to. The first time I became, or when I first became aware of this band, was through somebody that really annoyed me, and she would sing this song.
Oh, so it's a girl. Yeah, I thought it was Ryan.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ryan definitely really.
Well, sometimes he refers to me as she also.
Sure. Like a boat.
Yeah. She, yeah, exactly.
Sure.
I came boat up with the other Cephas. Night.
Exactly.
Boat Cephas. Cephas. She devil. No, she used to sing this song all the time. So then the first time I ever heard it, I was like, I didn't want to like it that much. And then the second time I heard it, I was like, Uncle, fine.
Yeah, dude, it's good. I mean, I don't know what you want. I will say this, though. This song has 26 million plus views on YouTube, but this record has only barely gone gold. So it's a new era.
No, I think that's true. And I guess I was in the car and listening to some folks talk about the same conversation that we had on this show weeks ago in regard to like who watches videos and where videos get watched. And the way that, you know, obviously there are people who are way ahead of the curve on this, or it's just completely organic to them to look things up on YouTube before they would expect to see it anywhere else. But, yeah, delivery methods change, and the model has changed. The model's changed for a long time now. But it's interesting. Like, well, people are still famous and makes gobs of money.
I think this band makes its money on the road.
You make it on the road and you make it from licensing. Vampire Weekend is one of the most licensed, other than, oh my God, what, I can't think of their name. What's the damn White Stripes ripoff? And I hate the White Stripes ripoff.
The
Black Keys.
Oh, the Black Keys.
Another band with two people in it with
garagey
color.
Yeah.
In their name. Yeah, the Black Keys. Black Keys and Vampire Weekend. I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, Stephen Colbert having them on the show when they had a license off to see which band deserved the alternative Grammy the most that year. And that would be, according to Colbert's logic, the band that had been licensed the most to
get the alternative Grammy, which is like an oxymoron in and of itself.
And it Vampire is. Weekend won that year, I believe. But whether they won or not,
they're just like, we'd like to thank everybody.
We went
everybody
through about 12 or 13 commercials.
You guys remember?
No, they won the Grammy, but they also, I mean, they were licensed in commercials that were in the double digits. And you got to think about it, every time that you're licensed in there, you're probably talking about between $150,000 and $500,000.
Oh, sure.
Well, you remember, like, as recently as maybe 10 years ago, it was like a badge of sellout if you licensed your music to, like, some corporate commercial. And that is not the case anymore.
It is not the case anymore. And there were, and to be fair, there were certain genres that were exempt from that. Like the hip hop guys could go out and do that.
Oh, they'd just be like, yeah, money, money, money.
And it'd be like, no problem.
That was a large part of the content of their lyrics. What I find funny is recently a lot of people that I've heard, in fact, you rarely ever hear the word sellout, but most of the people that I hear the word sellout from, if I ever hear it anymore, are either really young or kind of their genre of choice is metal. And these are two of the people that are least likely to pay – two of the genres of people that are least likely to pay for music when they're listening to it. You know, like somebody, mm-hmm. somebody that's 16 that's talking about a sellout, but then they're going to find every possible way that they can to not pay for the song that they're going to listen to.
Well, to be fair, we do that too.
No, of course. But I'm saying – we're talking about people using the word sellout.
Yeah, no, it's true. And like I don't think the term means anything anymore. Like
I don't know
if it ever did, really. I mean,
I don't think it ever did.
I mean, maybe if you like, okay, Billy Idol is once in Generation X, and like his solo stuff to me is shit. Maybe that's him cashing in.
I'm finally going away, by the way, for a record in the future.
Oh, great, man! I done let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. But I think your point is interesting in that. I do think that all that stuff is contextual. Like, some of it is you're young and you want to raise your fist against something.
I certainly had fiercer integrity when I was younger. I don't know if it was genuine, but like I felt like I had an identity, you know. And
well, and here's the other question to ask. Like, so what happens when? And I've asked myself this question too, and I don't necessarily know that there's an easy answer. But, like, what happens when you recognize fierce integrity, younger you, colliding with older, more reasoned you? Like, you know, and you don't necessarily have the same take that you did years ago.
Well, fierce integrity, younger me, was also fiercely irresponsible, like, spend money you don't have, and like, oh, yeah, bills? Yeah, there's a little bit of a disconnect.
I don't think that reason and integrity necessarily mean – I mean, I get what you're saying. I would say rather than fierce integrity, I would say enthusiastic, overly enthusiastic.
Sure, and that's a fair way to couch it. Sure. Yeah, totally.
Because I think about Patton Oswalt talking about how in his early 20s he was so enthusiastic about bands, and you ask 40-year-old Patton Oswalt, he's like, I like this band.
Yeah, that definitely happens. It gets dialed down.
Maybe the reality is, and maybe this is the slow burn toward becoming a crotchety old man. I don't know, but I think part of it is you recognize like what it is that you give a shit about, and you focus your attention on those things, and then the things that don't sort of meet those criteria, instead of spending a lot of time sort of railing against them, you're just like. It's not get it out of my way, and we're cool.
It's like,
I mean, I don't really know if that. I mean, I hear people say that all the time. I mean, for me personally, like I'm definitely just I'm not as enthusiastic. I feel like I'm more reasoned. Like to take a word that you just said when it comes to for me personally, but this is a bunch of three old guys talking about the
movie. We are middle aged dudes, is what we are.
Why don't we play A-Punk?
So this is the song that, I for a couple weeks, like even in my 40s, just needed to come home and listen to every day. So, I don't know.
All right. Let's do A-Punk.
Exotic, come stop to the
Yeah, that's your jam.
That is my jam.
Dude.
That blackberry preserves.
Have you ever perfect. Have you ever like, so if you could soundtrack your life, would that be one of the songs that like that you would put in certain situations where if you could just like flip a switch and
I want that played at my funeral.
Oh. Hey. All right.
I think that song could be interchangeable with the Ramones song in Royal Tenenbaums where Bill Murray's reading like all of the file on Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, and it's just that Ramones song, like where all the guys that she's had sex with and all that stuff. Like, I think that song could be. You're just looking at me like, well, because cat looks at me when I read him Nietzsche.
There's a reason for that. I don't really like that movie that much.
That's another sidebar.
And I like Wes Anderson and all that. But yeah, like this is, they're a Wes Anderson type band that I like better than most Wes Anderson movies. I actually like a couple of them quite a bit.
Can I just, this is, and we'll just, such a short sidebar, but my favorite part of Royal Tenenbaums is the backstory that I got from... I guess some of the notes on that movie, which is that Gene Hackman, at one point, they were shooting one of the scenes, and he realized that Royal Tenenbaum was standing directly in front of the Statue of Liberty in the shot, and he was like, "I should move so you guys could get that in." And Wes Anderson said, "No, no, it's Royal Tenenbaum." He wouldn't give a shit that he was standing in front of the Statue of Liberty.
That's
and
pretty so funny.
It is, and I, you know. And by the same token, you know, the Vampire Weekend had an incident with one of their covers. Not of this record. This record was fine.
One of their what?
Covers. One of the
they
album
covered
covers.
Somebody else?
No, one of the one of
oh,
their
the album
covers.
Oh, album covers.
So the and I don't know which I don't remember which title it was, but the one with the sort of blonde model girl on the cover.
Oh, Contra?
Yes.
Their second album.
Yes. Apparently, there was some controversy around she didn't know that she was going to be on that cover. And
yeah, that's important.
Yeah. And then she was, and of course, I'm sure it was everywhere. And so, yeah, that'll get you stopped in the supermarket.
It will.
Can I say something real quick before we...
I hope you do.
We go further with this, in that... every time that I saw, I like to read stuff about the band when I'm listening to the album. I usually listen to it a couple times through and make notes. And every time I saw anything about their bass player, Chris Baio, B-A-I-O, of course, my brain immediately
Scott Baio
like changed it out with Scott Baio.
Was Chachi in charge?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I thought about what it would be like if Scott Baio, if like Vampire Weekend had played on an episode of Happy Days. They could have been.
I don't even know what to do with this premise.
What was the name of the restaurant?
What would it
like
be
Al's
like?
Or something?
Al's? Yeah, well, I mean, they...
And they would always have bands.
Well,
and
Weezer
shit.
Actually did that video.
Oh, Christ.
It's true.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So maybe you're not as original as you thought.
Have
you
ever said I was original? I'm just telling you what kept going into my brain. Every time I saw Baio, I would snicker to myself thinking about Scott Baio.
Well, let's Ryan, you started down the Miller route, so let's pivot to Jeté. And
Jeté back to Coolsville.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, overall broad strokes on the record,
absolutely solid, you know, like brilliant singles. A couple songs that weren't singles, you know, I don't know that we necessarily have time to get into them now, but like a couple of songs that weren't singles, also brilliant. Peters out a little bit towards the end.
I think it's halfway. I honestly.
I mean, I'd give it an A minus. Like,
I'd say a solid B, B plus. I'd say a B plus.
A B cup.
Oh, a solid B guess.
Yeah, I'm probably in the B camp as well.
In the B camp?
Yeah, but I do think, like, akin to what I said earlier, like, it's just one of the... I feel like I'm not done rolling around in it yet. And
Like my dog, would it be done rolling around in whatever she rolls around in?
Exactly, yes. I'm sure it is, Lucy. And it's exactly the same.
Either any dog, really, yeah. Right?
That's Vampire Weekend, Vampire Weekend. We've got a few things coming up again. Our friend Jeff Ryder will join us next week. Shane, do you want to talk about what next week brings?
Okay, so next week might be a plus-sized episode. I'm thinking a little
bit. The Lane Bryant of podcasts?
Speaking of malls.
You got the music in you, Ryan. No, I haven't seen Jeff in a while, and we're going to have to warm him up into what we're doing here. And also, I think that so I was saying earlier that last week, you know, at the end of the show, we always sort of tease what the next couple of weeks are going to be. And my album, or the album that I'd picked for next week, was Fantagram Voices. But instead, I changed my mind because we've done two really recent albums. I feel like women have been underrepresented in the show, other than
certainly in my garage.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's the He-Man Woman Haters Club over here.
Definitely sticking with the
of the ones that live here. One of them should be in bed, and the other one wants to be in bed. So, like that hasn't had anything to do with what we've actually programmed, but yeah, we haven't done too much content down that road.
I'm just watching him try it. Like, I'm watching the plane go.
That's all right.
He pulled it out.
Yeah.
So next week the album is Janet Jackson Control, the debut album by Janet Jackson.
Oh, yes.
Michael Jackson's sister.
We'll all be featuring Nip Slips.
Oh, this is way, way before.
Dude, I am totally going to nip slip during that episode.
but it is.
It'll be shocking. Shocking.
Yeah.
It is the album that produced the immortal line, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, and so Kevin.
Maybe she had some.
Well,
friends.
And I've got. No, I've got.
What's your song next week?
Well, I've been waffling. I was going to do Generational Spinoza, but just some of our between recording banter, I think I want it to be When in Rome, The Promise. So
I think that's a good pick.
Yeah, I'll hold Generationals back for another episode. But yeah, The Promise by When in Rome. Promise.
Promise.
I don't remember this at all. I can't wait to go.
Once you hear it, you'll never unhear it. Promise. You'll never. Yeah. Promise.
Yeah.
No, what you're saying is like, promise. Hey, man. Promise.
All right, dude.
And Kevin, what is yours in 2 weeks? Do you have your album yet, or do you want to hold on?
You know what? Let me percolate on that yet, because I don't know. But I will, and by next week, I'll have that to share.
All right, guys. So we're signing off. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin. This is Somebody Likes It.
Bye now.